Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find out about how vitamin A deficiency is associated with severe mycoplasma pneumonia infections in children. This comes from Peking University in China. And it's important because it also means that many children in the United States could be more susceptible to all forms of viral and bacterial infections, especially in their lungs, if they're deficient in vitamins A, D, and E, and most are, and especially those coming from poorer families where people are not aware of the importance of vitamins. More on health and healing in just a moment. Then also today, I'm going to provide some voice to the issue that we should be engaged in fear-mongering. We should be engaged in locking down whole communities, putting people in jail, actually arresting them. That's now going on in Virginia, Washington State, and other places, and now it's going to spread. How far away are we from then martial law and taking away even more of our rights? Richard Gale will be on to share his comments on this. Tucker Carlson, though one segment I really agreed with him on, another segment I completely disagree with. And that's fine, but at least he is allowing research that is qualified research on the coronavirus to get broadcast. No one else will touch this. Why? Well, I'll explain that and why the media is not telling the truth about the origins. Guess who finally figured out, at least up to this moment, has done the only good research? Chinese scientists have been critical of their own methods of doing biological research at a laboratory right beside that animal market that caused the infection. Who says the Chinese scientists have said this in not one but two separate publications? These are peer-reviewed publications. The science is showing how it originated. Now, we had a guest on, a very qualified guest, who said that the genome of this does not meet certain criteria of the corona family. So is it possible that research, not as a biological weapon, that's not what it's inferring, but just the way we do research all the time on something, and then it gets out of a lab. And what happens then? Everybody goes into panic mode and then denialism. So Tucker Carlson did a little good segment on this. It's only about 4 minutes. We'll play it. And then we're going to give a voice to the voiceless scientists with outstanding credentials and background who are going to share their points of view. Now, mind you, these are not citizens and without academic background, and these are not just medical doctors. These people are considered the top of their field in the specific areas where the coronavirus is causing a panic. Yes, the coronavirus is serious, and it kills, and it's easily spread. But so are a lot of other things that are not being given the same attention. So they're speaking out on it. You could agree or disagree. But I believe in freedom of speech, especially from people who are part of the mainstream ultra-Orthodox medical and scientific community. That's the people, and I'll give their backgrounds. So we have that to share. I don't know how much more time we'll have beyond that, but we have more to give you, and we'll play it as we go. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, and this comes from Peking University. And it's a really good study because it shows that a mycoplasma, which is a very serious bacterial infection, leading to pneumonia and people dying, is frequently caused when people are suppressing their immune system. Now, when you take into account how many Americans are obese, how many people have diabetes or prediabetes, heart disease, cancers, you're dealing with an astronomical percentage of the American population. I mean, it's just huge. Probably 70%. And yet, we'll say in vaccine research that a particular vaccine will never have one of these type of people who have cancer, heart disease, diabetes, dementia, into a study. And yet these are the very people who would be given the vaccine with no qualifications at all. You just line up one size fits all, whether you're 16 or 60, whether you're an athlete or you have cancer, heart disease, get the vaccine, whether it's the flu vaccine or any others. So what we say we're trying to do as far as an intelligent public health measure is exactly the opposite of what we actually do. It's bad medicine, it's bad public health, and it's bad science. But it's good for controlling population and profits. Do you think for one moment they're not going to make the corona vaccine, when they get it, fast track with no good studies and get it into, make it mandatory in the population? That's where all this is going, unfortunately. So the least you should know is build up your immune system, because that's the most likely way to prevent yourself from not only developing mycoplasma pneumonia, but also all other forms of respiratory conditions. What do you need? Vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin E. And how much you will need will be based upon your age, your state of health, your weight, body size, body mass, and whether you're physically active or sedentary, whether you have other compromised immune conditions, like if you're a 60-year-old and you've got arthritis and you've got lupus and you have diabetes, the amount that you would require will be substantially different than someone who's younger and healthier or older and healthier. So that's why you need to reach out to any one of the qualified and licensed nutritionists. And I'm not saying they have to be holistic, just as long as they have a qualified background in nutritional biochemistry, so they understand the role of nutrients. And if they are a naturopath, even better. If they have a background in holistic medicine, really good. Nursing or dentistry, where they're holistic and look at the role of diet and supplements in your immune system, excellent. So you have about 100,000, more or less, practitioners in America who could help tailor your specific needs, but get it especially for you and your child. Now, from the University of Bath, beautiful town, by the way, in the United Kingdom, they're saying the regular exercise benefits your immune system, even when you're in isolation. So here's what they're saying. They're saying that being in isolation without access to gyms and sports clubs should not mean people stop exercising. Keeping up regular daily exercise at a time when much of the world is going into isolation will play an important role in helping maintain a healthy immune system. The article was published in the International Journal of Exercise Immunology Review. And this was based upon 40 years of research. And they're saying that regular moderate intensity exercises is beneficial for your immune system. So, what we don't want is we don't want arduous exercise that can suppress the immune system. Marathon training suppresses the immune system. Now, I don't even know how many I've done. I did over 23 New York marathons and probably another 20 first marathons, the first London, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Marine Corps, Montreal, etc. Jamaica marathon. In fact, there's a picture, kind of an aside, there's a picture up on my website, and there's a video bio picture of my history as a competitive athlete, which I still am, training for the World Games now. And there's Sam Skinner, an outstanding athlete, and myself, and we're clasping hands, looking absolutely exhausted. That's just at the end of the Jamaica Marathon. And we both won golds, by the way. We took home 2 gold medals in the marathon. And the reason, if you look close, look at the picture, and you'll see, well, now he's African-American, but you still see very strong streaks of white from the thigh going clear down to the ankle on him and myself. That's the body's minerals from dehydration, because the one thing they forgot to give in the marathon was water. The water stations, we didn't have any water. And because the first few athletes out, they had a little, like, looked like a card table filled with water. And they just took it. Everybody else was having to train. Fortunately, we were training by seeing how far we could go without drinking just to condition our body. We'd run up and down the steps of my building, 25 flights, with a gallon of water in each hand 25 times to simulate what it would be running without water up hills, meaning we had no water to replenish us. And then we did it, and that's what got us through. In any case, when exercising long distance is damaging your immune system and speeds up the aging of your muscles, what you do is you compensate. So we looked at what was missing and compensated so we didn't have a defective immune system because of our training or racing. The average athlete, 99.9% of athletes, don't compensate. They just go out and put in their hard miles as if there's nothing else to the process. There is. So when you're at home, if you're not exercising, if you're binging watching 3,000 versions of Breaking Bad, your immune system is going to take a hit. So you must exercise. Now, to help you out, we have videos up on YouTube that are free, public access, as are mine, that show you how to exercise from your home, even if you have physical limitations, how to do yoga from a chair, sitting in a chair. Wonderful exercise. Very creative and brilliant people who put this together, especially this one on yoga from a chair. So it helps a lot of people. So please do exercising every 2 hours. Never sit for more than 2 hours unless there's some rationale you can't. You got to get up and you do some. These don't have to be hard exercises, like standing against right in front of a wall, standing about then 2 feet back. Put your hands on the wall and then lean in like you're doing a push-up, but against a wall. Then against a wall, if you have a little rubber ball, a basketball, a soccer ball, put it at the lower part of your back, and now go up and down with that against the wall, doing half squats, meaning you go down to about the level you'd be if you were sitting in a chair, and then back up, and then go up further on your balls of your feet. Now your calves are being exercised, which pumps blood back up through the veins to the heart and then out through the arteries. Your quads, your glutes, hamstring, all being exercised, and that's what you want. Doing stretching, deep breathing, because when you're sitting, your neck tends to fall forward. When you're on a phone, it goes forward. And when you're looking at a computer, you go forward. That causes problems with your spine and your back. I'm seeing so many people today with poor postures. Online, there are many different companies selling these lightweight braces. Many of them are made out of a tight cloth, and you put them on, you tighten, and it straightens your back posture right back up. You need that. and then just tightening your thighs and relax. Tighten them for 30 seconds and relax. Tighten for 30 seconds. You do that in a car, on a plane, and that can help you also. Simple things. Because if you don't, then you're going to have poor circulation. You're not going to have proper oxygenation. Getting oxygen in the lungs deep enough, you're going to be shallow breathing, which is not healthy. Deep, slow, rhythmic breathing is very healthy. And the more deep you breathe, the more oxygen you have for nutrients to travel throughout the body, including red blood cells. Anyhow, something simple, but we got to exercise to keep our immune system strong, especially if you're confined. Now, another study, this is from the University of Leicester, in the United Kingdom, It's better than weight loss for improving heart function in type 2 diabetics. That's good news, considering that we have almost 100 million pre-diabetic and diabetics, and around the world, diabetes is just, it's mushrooming, and people die from it. So we want to keep you healthy. Why? Because heart failure is one of the most common complications in people with type 2 diabetes. And younger adults with type 2 diabetes already have changes in their heart structure and function that pose a risk of developing heart failure when they're 8, 9, 10 years old. That is what parenting has done today. That is what lack of awareness of how you produce disease in yourself and your children is happening today. And we're not talking about a few thousand or a few million or 10 million or 20 million. We're talking probably upwards of 80% of the children and 90% of adults. I mean, we are a nation that is making every possible bad choice when it comes to our health, except for the small percentage, about 5% are doing it right. And then another study from Queen Mary University in the United Kingdom that you must have vitamin D to have critical immune health. And if you don't, then that could lead to dementia, Alzheimer's, cancer. Yeah. And right now, you need the sun. You need the sun to keep your muscles and bones healthy. A new meta-analysis, that means many different studies, were examined to see what commonalities could be applied towards what it does protectively. And what they found was vitamin D protects you against colds and flu, and that means it could help protect you against coronavirus, which falls in the same family as many of the flu. It's not a single virus, it's a whole cacophony of viruses with different structures. So everybody benefits from vitamin D to help at least be one of the things you can do for yourself. And this study looked at 11,000 participants in a double-blind placebo-controlled study. Then they looked at 25 double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trials. And sure enough, vitamin D was shown to be extremely effective on colds and flu risk. It substantially reduced the risk of acute respiratory infection by taking vitamin D. So that's good news, good information. How much? At this time, I would suggest people be very conscious, take 10,000 units a day. All right? But for the average person who is in a safe place, 2,000 to 6,000 a day. But if you're in a highly toxic, a dangerous environment, you bet I'm going to go for a higher amount. And finally, from the University of California, that vitamin B12 helps with neurodegenerative disorders. So make sure you're getting about 1 milligram of methylated B12 and 1 milligram of methylated folic acid to help prevent neurodegenerative disorders, because you could be deficient, and deficiency of B12 and folic acid could lead to Parkinson's conditions, lead to other neurodegenerative disorders, including multiple sclerosis. So, and that's not just one study, that's multiple studies that came to that. On, if you're a woman in menopause, according to the University of Vaskilia in Finland, physical activity contributes to positive mental well-being. That's a recent study found that late menopausal status is associated with elevated levels of depressive symptoms that indicate the negative dimension of mental well-being. However, if you start exercising, it helps take that from a negative to a positive. And one reason is it creates endorphins. And endorphins are very positive to your mood. And that's important. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to give a voice to the voiceless. But we're going to start with Tucker Carlson right out of the break. Then I'm going to talk. Well, I'm not just going to talk, I'm going to quote exact and verbatim some of the most important prestigious scientists in the world saying, let's stop fear-mongering and let's deal with this in a more reasonable and responsible manner. That I would agree with. Please stay with us. By the way, something good that we could learn from the royal family of Great Britain, Queen Elizabeth and her family, they use homeopathy. In fact, there's an article by Richard Kay, editor-at-large for the Daily Mail, that says the royals put their faith in homeopathy and alternative cures. Quote, during their decades when she was still traveling abroad, a small leather case went everywhere with the Queen. Divided into 60 compartments and replenished by aides before each journey, it contained a bewildering supply of homeopathic remedies. There was arsenicum album for food poisoning, cocculus for travel sickness, nux vomica for indigestion, and antarctica for jet lag and bruising. For the Queen, the presence of these cures was not just a reassuring element of comfortable travel. She considered it her duty to remain well on overseas engagements, not least because of the logistic nightmare if she were taken ill. But above all, that leather case symbolized the royal patronage for alternative medicine. And despite the shrill claims that such complementary treatments are quackery, who could say they were not served her well? At almost 94, she has enjoyed remarkably robust health for much of her life and has seldom been forced to cancel official duties because of illness. So while there will be anxieties about the Prince of Wales as he fights the coronavirus, the question for millions will be, what about the Queen? Despite her extraordinary resilience, her age puts her in the highest risk category. Buckingham Palace aides have been cross-checking diaries to see when Charles last came into close contact with his mother and other members of the royal family. In fact, the mother and son rarely meet in the course of their working days, but the prince likes to drop in on her when he is performing duties at Buckingham Palace. Last time they met was March 12th, when he officiated an investiture and called on the Queen. Now, whatever arguments range between believers and skeptics on the value of homeopathy, the royals have sided firmly, if not privately, with their supporters. The Queen's father, George VI, relied upon much of it, as he did on conventional medicine. And so did the Queen Mother, as she lived to 101 in robust health. Even Prince Philip, generally more skeptical on such matters, for years wore a copper bracelet to ward off arthritis. Princess Anne likes to take a compound of arnica with her when she's on horseback to deal with bruises if she would fall. And Prince Charles has been the most public defender of alternative cures. And what they're saying is, yeah, they deal with it. Also, Prince Charles, for all the other things I would challenge him on, is a major supporter of organic farming and has been for most of his adult life. And that is a good thing. In fact, one of his organic farms is what helps pay for his expenses. One day I'll do a commentary on this, because last time I was visiting London and Great Britain and I was doing some research, I was on a tour bus. I love to go out on these tour buses because these are extremely knowledgeable tour guides. They're frequently academics who for whatever reason, are not teaching. But I happen to have a really smart one on this tour bus. And as he's telling us all about the heritage places we were going, I like to go to see old homes and the places that I wouldn't have known about. And he made a comment about what it cost to keep the royal family. And that there was an argument that they should be paying taxes, which historically they didn't, because it cost so many millions of dollars a year to foot the bill for, you know, the royals. And I waited till the tour bus had ended and everybody got off and gave their tip, which he certainly deserved. But then I said, may I share a few thoughts with you? He said, sure. Because that was his tour ended for the day. And I said, I love to study subjects. And one of the subjects I study is cost analysis. And I said, I did my own homework on this. And if it's a value, use it. If not, dismiss it. But the royals bring in over $2 billion a year in income, where people go to visit Buckingham Palace, and they go to Windsor Castle, and I told him, go visit, the Tower of London, go visit the royal jewels. Well, the crown jewels belong to the monarch in power. It's theirs. They legally own it. However, there is a covenant not to sell them. At one time, they were sold when there was civil wars and War of the Roses and all these other wars throughout English history. They would sell them down to get pay for their armies and munitions. But then that stopped. So even though they belong to the current queen, they're hers, they're kept on display for the benefit of the crown. Now, there's a difference. The crown is all of the nation. So it belongs to the country. What's her personal is different. There are paintings in some houses she has, and I have a list of all the things they own and their value, and she's not the richest woman in the world. No, the Illuminati did not originate, and there's so many stupid things on the internet that are inaccurate. But I said, so yes, you are right. They are given a stipend, but that stipend doesn't go in their pocket. Go into one of the largest homes in the world, Buckingham Palace. All of the expenses, the electric, the maintenance, the gardens, the carpentry, all of the staffing, the people, there were 500 events that occurred at Buckingham Palace, and that money goes to the crown, back to the people. So when you add how much you're given and how much do they give you, it's completely one-sided. That would be like, imagine that if they got, let's just say for argument's sake, $70 million a year. But because of them and where they put the money, you got $2 billion in return. I would say that's a very good investment. And yet there were people who said, no, down with the monarchy. The monarchy doesn't mean anything. They're just, they're not allowed. For example, no one in the direct monarchy, in line of succession, are allowed to hold a job or open a business that would compete with a commoner. So Prince Charles couldn't open up a restaurant. He couldn't open up a jewelry store. There's a whole lot of things they're excluded from doing. They're all invested in charities, hundreds of charities that they raise money for, lots of money for. And these are good charities, animal protection and helping victims and helping the poor. It's just you got to get beyond your body politics, whether you like what they represent. And I don't like monarchy. You got to look at a deeper story. But I'm going to just take one night for maybe 2 hours and go through the history. I'll start just with England. I'll do other countries later on. But just to show you what the historical view is, what the common present perception is, and what the reality is, because they are not connected. Just like when you see a picture of Louis XIV, the Sun King, and you see his wife, his second wife, and you see the court and the manners, the etiquette, the extreme etiquette, things that you could not imagine. I'll go into a great deal where he had to have a whole group that would bribe to get into his chamber in the morning because those were the first people he saw went through a ritual of his nanny, her whole life, by the way. Every morning we'd go over and give him a kiss on the cheek, and then a person would come open the windows, and exactly at that time, and then he's awake, and then he did his toiletries, of which you had to be a very important person to assist him, but this was all viewed. Everything was viewed. He was being shaved, or his hands cleaned, or his clothes, by a group of people. Why? Why do that? Why spend a year's salary on having a dress made? It was all the etiquette of the court. Now, here's the opposite of that. The etiquette of the court did not include any bathroom behavior. Hence, you could be walking down the hallway of the Hall of Mirrors in Versailles, the most beautiful hall in the world ever created, and suddenly all this defecation just starts coming out from underneath people's, you know, they'd stop for a moment, squat, look at you, carry a conversation, take a dump. And you're thinking, oh my God, you just spent your salary on your outfit. And then later people come along, there were people who would wipe this up. It was so bad, the smells were so bad of human excrement at Versailles that the queen had to close all of her windows, but they didn't have a septic system that worked, so all of the human excrement stayed there. It would be as if you had a full toilet and you had to live every day of your life in that bathroom without flushing the toilet. Look at the extremes. But every single thing otherwise with etiquette, how you spoke, who spoke, what you ate, when the king ate, you had to watch, but you didn't eat at that time. The extremes, the duality of absurdity and decadency with mannerisms. Anyhow, I'll get to that on another show. It's just a hobby of mine I like to do. I just was thinking of, you know, the royal family and some of their absurdities, but I'll get to that. But the point is, they promote alternative health. So I decided with Richard Gale, let's take a look at whether or not homeopathy has peer review, double-blind, placebo-controlled research to prove that it actually works. And it does. And if you want to read the article about the real science behind homeopathy, which is a legitimate science of healing, just go on and read any of the letters that we wrote against Wikipedia, who says all alternative therapies are garbage and quackery, all of them, all the practitioners, all your experiences, nothing you've ever had happen is real, it's all placebo. The absurdity of this from people who have no qualifications or background in the field at all. So one of them was on homeopathy, and that shows you why the queen and her family, at least, are on the right side of trying to keep themselves healthy using homeopathy. Now we have Richard Gale on the line. Richard, give us your overview of what is happening concerning the official White House, World Health Organization, CDC, FDA pronouncements about the coronavirus and what we should be doing. And leading all that is one Anthony Fauci, who really made a mess of how he handled the war on AIDS. Your thoughts, please.
Yes. Well, Fauci's been there for a very long time. I kind of think of him as the Joe Biden of the federal health system. He probably should have stepped down a long time ago. I mean, we can remember Fauci, not just the AIDS, the HIV epidemic or problem in the 80s under Reagan, and how they messed that up, but also just the swine flu back in 2009-2010. That was their predictions were completely off, and there was a lot of fear mongering. I kind of looked at when I look at what Fauci's been saying since the outbreak, and we're looking at when our health officials started to really speak about it. Mid-January, and Fauci came out. So if you look at a timeline, you could just what Fauci stated since mid-January to his most recent pronouncements, he was already kind of touting a vaccine back on January 28th. February 7th, he was saying, well, travel restrictions won't stop it, won't prevent it. It can delay it, but there's no rationale for stopping travel restrictions. Then on February 17th, he publicly stated that the threat is, quote, just minuscule. And he even recommended people can skip masks unless you are found to be contagious and don't have to worry about catching anything from products coming in from China. That was February 17th. And then February 25th, he came out and he said, well, we've been prepared for this a long time ago. We put together all the contingency plans and preparedness years ago to be able to slow down the spread. But at this time, it's not important to implement any of it. That was back on February 25th. And then, of course, March 2nd was when he came out saying, oh, this is reached pandemic proportions. On March 4th, in front of a congressional hearing, he said he was expecting a 2% fatality. Again, March 12th, in front of another congressional gathering, he was saying that... Now he's saying, this is where he was backpedaling, that in fact we're not prepared for handling this. And then 3 days later, he made his worst case scenario prediction that it could be 1.7 million deaths. He was also stated 200,000, which is the number it's kind of touted around by the Trump administration. On March 24th, that we're unable to detain it, or to be able to trace the progression of it. March 25th, again, a press conference. We're still unable to prepare for it, so we better start preparing for the next cycle, the second cycle. We got to get this vaccine ready for the next cycle, and we also don't have any drugs, so there's drugs that we can fully rely upon. And then just most recently, he just came out just a couple of days ago saying our projections are wrong. The fatality is probably 10 times lower. The fatality rate is probably more like the seasonal flu, which is 0.1%. And so that's where they're standing now and just saying, okay, there will be a second cycle of the coronavirus, so we need to be preparing for that for next winter, and perhaps maybe in the autumn if it happens to reemerge. So, looking at this, you have to wonder. This is a repeat of what we saw during the HIV crisis, and what we also saw with the swine flu. It's a lot of bumbling. And really not having the answers that they think and constantly changing their opinions on things.
Final thought. Last evening, I was taking a look at which governors around the country were now mandating home detention and arresting people, or they could be arrested, put in jail, and fined if they were not out and justifiably so for food or medicine. And I'm thinking that's extremely draconian. That is not helping a situation. That could inflame situations because, after all, people have not been conditioned as individuals or families to stay at home, especially when there has been shortages of masks, shortages of any information that help them deal with being confined. It seems like all the energy is into giving trillions of dollars, almost $4 trillion now, to corporate America to bail them out, and little to the average American. Certainly now the unemployment rate's going to be around 34 to 40%, the highest it's ever been in American history. During the Great Depression, at the height of the Great Depression, unemployment was 25%, and right now we're at 34%, and it's going to escalate because think of all the small businesses that did not need to close, but did close, that were not a risk of causing contamination. You could have very easily have put in every one of those environments, whether it's a boutique or even, let's say, some other store, you could have put barriers like you're having taxi cabs. So there's actual barriers between the customer and what they need. But none of the really creative and reasonable approaches were done. Just everybody got closed down. Now, these people... Most businesses borrow money. All the clothing manufacturers borrow money. one season in order to buy the fabric, to pay the designers, the people who actually design these fabrics, and it's rarely ever the designer. And it's teams of whole teams of very talented artists who come in and do the designs, and the final credit always goes to the actual designer. There are some exceptions, but that's normally how it's done. That's also the same way with a lot of painters, by the way. They'll sign the painting. They generally don't do the work, at least not in their older years. Some exceptions, most time it's not. But think of all the people who now borrowed money, can't pay it back. Debt collections have not stopped. The president, the governors could stop debt collection. They're not. Think of the people who don't have money to buy food. Where can they go get food if there's no money? They run out of money. Think of the people who just had Social Security, and that's not enough. So what we have done is we've had poor leadership at every level. Every corporate level, they're just in it for the money. And now they have a huge amount of money, $4 trillion just for corporate America. Everything else is a secondary side thought. And by the way, Bernie Sanders is a big part of that. I'm considering him nothing more than a fraud at this moment on all levels. But I'll get into that and with some proof of that on an upcoming commentary I'm doing on this. There's no good outcome at this moment in body politics for any of these people. And I'm particularly disappointed in Tulsi Gabbard. She really did a good head fake on the progressive community. Smart for her, bad for the people who were taken advantage of, because fool me once and that's it. We won't get by with that a second time. In any case, we have a mess. They're not considering what it's like to be alone or with a family. And how are you protecting other men in the families? How are you protecting a member of the family who has to go out every day? The one person that has an essential job, goes to work, is on public transportation, is not taught all the ways that you can protect yourself except stay a certain distance and wear a mask. But what if they don't have masks? There are no masks. There are millions and millions and millions of Americans can't find a mask, can't buy a mask. A lot of the ads on the internet are fake ads. They get your money. They don't give you anything. They close down shop and they're an offshore, you know, a fraud group. That's happening. And a lot of the masks don't work in any case. They're junk. The science is there to show they are not highly protective, as they claim. So nothing but misinformation. No viable way of dealing with all this. And now they want to arrest you. What do you think is the likelihood that we're going to go from arresting people or fining people who are already broke, and now you're fining them more than what they would make in a month for being out on the street? Are they going to ever go back onto the street? And then you want to give them money for staying home for, what is, 75 days or whatever the number is? Well, what's the motivation to go back to work if there is work to go back to? And what are all those small business people supposed to do in larger corporations if they've got loans and they've got factors and they've got other places they owe money and hence cannot even afford the service on their financial debt? So we have literally bankrupted an already bankrupt country. So it's a double redundancy of stupid. And I see this everywhere. I don't trust a damn person in the media. They're idiots. I don't trust any congressman. They're sociopaths. I don't trust any of these policymakers. I sure as hell don't trust anything Anthony Fauci says, because I was up against him for 20 years in the war on cancer. I wrote a lot of articles against him and the entire cancer establishment and the AIDS establishment, because they misdirected that and a lot of people died who didn't have to. So what are your thoughts, the likelihood of what's going to happen when they start arresting or jailing people, which they now are putting into motion? They say, well, we're not sure if we're going to arrest them, but we want the right to arrest them. And we're not sure we want to put them in jail, but we want the right to put them in jail. What do you think is the likely outcome of this scenario? Richard?
Oh, it was a question to me. I'm sorry. Yeah, I wasn't sure it was a question to me. Well, I think one of the problems has been that it's not a problem per se, but the state, there's a lot of allowance given to individual states to impose their particular policies and these kinds of threats. The current administration is doing nothing really at a national level. that's looking out for the welfare of the average citizen. And so we end up with these kind of draconian policies that are being done in Virginia, as well. I think I've heard some things about going on in Florida as well. This is where we really need a truly competent federal health system, and not just a bunch of technocrats that are beholden to to private interests in the pharmaceutical industry. We need something much more like what you find in Europe and in the EU, which is not beholden to the pharmaceutical industry near to the extent that it is in this country. I think that's where we're at. We've been able to see, like with South Korea and Taiwan, has been able to do at a national level, and to curtail and to contain the spread of the virus.
Let's focus on that for a moment. Isn't it interesting that there's a decline, substantial and steep decline, in coronavirus infections and deaths in South Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore? All of those countries, except South Korea, are right near China. Now, China also, though I never trust their statistics, but they also are claiming it's substantially declined, including the Wuhan section where this all began. And yet in the United States, you don't hear commentators talking about what Taiwan is doing. To the contrary, it's like Taiwan doesn't exist. And yet China we're supposed to trust. And this is rather remarkable. And the reason that they had such a great drop-off is because they had an immediate and rather sophisticated way of tracking people who might have been exposed, and therefore being able to contact people and give them tests. So they tested them, had accurate tests. We don't. And we certainly don't have tests for most people. And so we may have millions of people who are infected, but carrying no symptoms, because you can be asymptomatic. And then a person like Mardi Gras, now we're finding out that New Orleans has this huge spike in coronavirus. It's rapidly increasing. It'll probably pass California next week because of Mardi Gras. And all those kids that went to the beach, thinking that, defiant of anyone in authority because they wanted to drink, have drugs and sex and have pleasure. Now they're coming home and we're finding out coronavirus is just spiking. So do we have a way of monitoring who were you with? Which plane was you on? Let's contact the people on that plane. Did you go back to your school? If so, were you in the dormitories? Were you at meetings? We have none of the above. Other countries have all the above. So they have a way of tracking. We don't. And then they have a way of testing. We don't. And then they are also in quarantine. So unless we look at the models of other people who are succeeding, we're going to be continuing to see one surge after another surge after another surge till summertime and it burns itself out. And we finally have enough isolation. But in the process of isolating, are you going to tell the average American who already is suffering from cabin fever, oh, you got to continue in quarantine for the next 3 months? And what's supposed to be paying their bills? And who's going to provide them with food? And what happens when we overconsumed all of the food, so now we're going to have substantial shortages for health food stores? I know health food stores are already out of food completely. They're going to go broke. Nobody's giving them a break. The landlord isn't reducing the rent or giving a rent moratorium. You're going to see the largest amount of bankruptcies and financial collapse in world history. In the United States, starting here, but the whole world is bankrupt. And then it's just going to go country to country, unless you do what some countries do and nationalize our entire healthcare system, take all the profit out of it, get rid of all of the administrators, and start giving proper healthcare to people, as is being done in other countries. But we're not, our body politic is controlled, and as a result, profit is the controlling factor. And the media protects that, so we're not going to see that happen. So I'm just saying that we're in for a badass time. And all this stuff on television, the best thing you can do is be smart. At home, get masks And clean your mask at least 5 times a day with hydrogen peroxide spray on the inside, outside. Wherever possible, wear gloves, wash the gloves, and the surface areas have to be washed. Hydrate yourself fully, and if you can get access to fruits, juices in particular are very important. Grapefruit, orange juice. If you've got supplements of vitamin C, take C every other hour. Vitamin D, if you can get out and get sunlight, that's better. But if you can't, a minimum of 10,000 units a day. But if you're getting sick, you can go up to 50,000 units. And astragalus, echinacea, and licorice, herbs and botanicals you can use. Because this is what helps you from getting sicker, and if you are sick, getting you well faster. And then if you're in a house, isolate as best as possible the person who's infected and make sure that they have nothing that they use that anyone else will use. No silverware, plates, dishes, bowls, toothbrushes, and sterilize down that bathroom every time someone uses it, especially an infected person. So within your quarantine, you may have to have a quarantine. Now, that's what I would suggest. Now, tomorrow I'm going to give the feedback on these other people because I don't have time today. Thank you, Richard. I appreciate your input. And I'll play the Tucker Carlson piece tomorrow. But a couple more things. Now, we're doing this anti-aging program, and we're getting some remarkable results already after 2 weeks. And yesterday we finished our first quarantine of 14 days. No one's sick. But in spite of the fact that no one is sick, everyone, I'm having them stay in quarantine for another 2 weeks. Why? Because when you're outside and you're in the sun, that is phenomenally important for you. But when you're in close proximity, if you wear a mask and you have hydrogen peroxide disinfecting it, and you have colloidal silver also helping disinfect bacterial and viral contamination, and if you wear gloves, yeah, it's a little inconvenient, but guess what? Everybody is having great time, lectures every day. We're going to start posting our first lectures later today because I've got Jesse is editing them and going to put them up on prn.fm later today. It'll be a special headline, and Jesse will create a headline so you know to go to these lectures. And then Phil is going to send them out to everyone at home, and then we're going to post them on YouTube. And I think he's got 5 already. Some really good ones about how to rebalance your life will be one of the first, and how to slow down the aging process second. But no one's missed a lecture. Everyone's having juices all day long, healthy, clean juices, building up their immune system, being outside, exercising in a gym. 5 people maximum in a gym that's 5,000 square feet, so 1,000 square feet per person, with masks, with a little ionizer, with gloves, alcoholing down their equipment. That's what you have to do inside your homes. The kind of detail I'm doing here, this is the safest farm I know in America. Clean, healthy, safe, beautiful, watching eagles right now. And we have to understand how to keep our minds proactive, not passively spectating off a computer or television. Because all if you do all day long is just listen to the pundits, you're getting a lot of propaganda and very little that can empower you, very little that's going to help you. You're not going to have anyone say, do you have a juice extractor? Because if not, you can order one through the mail and get it and start juicing. Juice tomatoes, juice cucumbers, juice lemons. You're not going to have that. If you do it at home, you can. Here, we do reading every day. We read 15 minutes, and then we discuss, what does this reading mean? And even the classics, where people say, I haven't heard the classics since, you know, I was 10 years old. Well, good, you're 70. Time that you understood the importance of what the metaphors were in those classics. Watch a film. Last night we watched Overcoming the Dark Side, 20 minutes. Then we had an hour discussion where everyone participated and gave their impressions of what that meant. What happens when you're trying to do something good, but someone in your life is toxic and negative, whining and complaining, always demanding? Well, what if you're that person? And then suddenly people say, hands went up, I was that person, I am that person. Now you understand what it means to be the toxic person in a non-toxic person's life and how that can overwhelm them emotionally, and you bring their emotions right down, and then they get depressed and they just give up. So bring ourselves to the higher side of our being, the more enlightened side, the more spiritual side. But you can only do that once you understand how to overcome the dark side. So 20 minutes. So don't watch anything more than 20 minutes and then talk it, even if you're alone in your house. Because when you talk about something you've just learned, you remember it better than if you just read it and let it go, or watch it and let it go. Talk it, it becomes a part of your vocabulary, part of your mindset. Then you can use it as a tool over and over again. Listen to your own your own explanations of the problem and the solutions. That's what we're doing. You should do the same thing. And then after everything's done at 9 o'clock, put on a film. You know, select a film, whoever likes Fred Astaire or the Marx Brothers, something light, fun. You know, relax the mind and take you back to a time when humor was really creative and ingenious. The Marx Brothers were the best at it, and where entertainment was outstanding. So you balance a day, bringing balance in, something intellectual, something creative, something interpersonal, something spiritual, something physical, something nutritional, something giving, and then you use that in a day so your day is balanced. Otherwise, you're going to walk around and until mold begins to grow in your underwear or your pajamas, and yes, they do have to be changed and cleaned at least once a year, and then you're going to just keep going to the refrigerator, looking at the same unhealthy things, and then going back and sitting in a chair, and that's not good. So we're having a ball, and we are going to have the retreat coming up in about 3 weeks from now, and those who are coming, I'll show you the safe way to get here, how, and by the way, airplanes are empty, the safe way to fly, as we all did, and even how to self-quarantine so you get the benefit of everything but contaminate nobody. And that's what we've just gone through. Now we're going through another whole cycle to show how you can take this knowledge home with you so you don't even notice you have a mask on. But your mask is clean and sterile. And others, well, they use it and throw it away because they didn't know how to sterilize it. We're out of time, everyone. Hope you got some information you can use today. I look forward to sharing more. And last night, go to the archive, prn.fm, and listen and download last night's show. It's a part of the video bio that age is not a death sentence, and how there are people alive today who were cured using complementary and alternative methods, and how that was suppressed by the Orthodox age community because it competed with their hundreds of billions of dollars in profits. Thank you all for listening.